Welcome to the Funny Mummies podcast. I'm your host, Hattie Ashdown, comedian and mum to two very lively boys. Each episode, I chat with amazing women from the world of comedy, bringing you a non-judgy dose of mum and tonic, how to stay afloat, laugh through the chaos, and be bloody great women. Hello, welcome to another joyous episode of the Funny Mummies podcast with me, your host, Hattie Ashdown, mum of two very rude boys. And today I'm joined by a returning Funny Mummy guest. I'm so happy to have her back for a long-awaited catch-up. She is an author of two books, one knee-deep in life, wife, mother and realist, and the other book, No Shame, How to Drop the Guilt. To quote her tour blurb, she's loud, she swears, she's inappropriate. She's the comedian behind the social media antics of Knee Deep in Life. It is, of course, Laura Belbin. And she has taken her brand new show with the one question, is there such a thing as too much? So we had a fantastic chat. My gosh, strap in. There'll be chats about that too. There will be some swears. So if you have little people running around, you might be good to put them out the room. There will be swears, talk about dating, talk about mums at the school gates. Not dating the mums at the school gates, but maybe. This is a good one. Enjoy. Welcome to another Funny Mummies. And yes, here she is, Laura Belbin, aka Knee Deep in Life.
She's hello, back. Mate.
Woo!
Hi. I look different from last time.
Was it during lockdown?
I think I had black hair then. Yeah. I had a fringe. It was long and...
You didn't have headphones. She's just so pro now.
I've got a road mic. Don't dick about, mate. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast? Because I've said dick within the first 40 seconds.
Yeah, no. I know you like a swear up. There's no point getting a swear box with you because it would just be full.
It would be.
My kid said to the other day, but Mummy, you swear too much. Do you swear in front of your kids?
You know what? Weirdly, I think people think that I swear to my kids and around my kids. And actually, I don't. But if I'm in the car, I mean, they've obviously heard me swear. I'm a lot more careful around them than I would be around anybody else. Yeah, but if I'm in the car and someone's pissed me off, mate, they're going to hear it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I didn't mean I'm going, you little... To my
kids. But I think people think that's how I speak to my kids, and it's like, I don't do that. I don't speak to my children like that. Annoyingly, I've had so much therapy, I know that that's quite abusive, so I tend to not speak to my children that way. Yeah.
Always one of my favourite things, seeing a woman in a supermarket to a kid going, stop fucking swearing.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I wonder where they got it from. Yeah. You shouldn't be fucking swearing. To be fair, though, obviously I've got a teenager and then I've got a child. You know, they're 9 and 14, right?
Both boys.
They're both boys. And also I'm quite open and honest. And like I've said, I've had so much fucking therapy, mate. So I'm really open and honest. And like I've said to them, at the end of the day, you're at an age, you do know what words are socially acceptable and what words aren't.
Exactly.
You are going to potentially use those words. And if you do, I can't sit here and tell you you shouldn't, because you know that I use them. Yeah. But just be mindful, if you do choose to use them, the environment you use them in, because if it's around other adults, you might get in trouble. But also, at 14, I used to say the word fucking after every other word because I used to think I was so cool for being allowed to say it.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. My eldest son, he does swear, and I think it's fine. If he was a crack den addict or he was selling heroin, I'd have worries. I'd have concerns. But... ultimately, if he's going to say really fuck in front of his mates or show his middle finger, I'm all right with that.
Well, I'm glad we've cleared that up. She's not teaching her kids to swear. But yeah, as long as I know not to tell the headmaster to F off.
Yeah, exactly. You just got to know where to say it.
Unless it's the last day of school and he was a complete prick.
Exactly, yeah. Just tell him to fuck off.
This is like a kind of like yes or no, just to warm us up and get us in a silly mood.
Love it.
We're both going through a bit of a time. And sometimes it's good to be a bit silly. So these are just like yes or no answers. Okay. They're just really stupid. So are you jeans or are you leggings?
Leggings.
Do you like plans or surprises?
Surprises.
Books or movies?
Movies.
Time machine or magic wand?
Ooh.
It's a hard one, isn't it?
Oh, God. But if you had a magic wand, could you not create... the time machine.
Yes!
Magic wand.
If there was a point for these, I would say, wheel, wheel. Last one. I think I might know the answer, but clean as you cook or clean up at the end?
Clean up at the end, mate.
I know, me too.
Clean as you fucking... I'm telling you, if you were to see what I'm looking on my breakfast bar right now, it's fucking disgusting. You're trying to get humans out of a house who, by the way, have zero concept of time or just shit.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so stressful. And like, I get back from the school run and then I'm like, oh yeah, now I've got to try and fucking work. It's a lot. Yeah. Being a single parent is a lot.
It is a lot. I do have a few friends that I've watched them, and this was when I started to realise, and I know you're ADHD as well, and all the best people are. Oh, and this was when I realised, oh, maybe I'm not like other people, was watching my friends loading the dishwasher, unloading, as they're talking to me, making lunch, just like a machine. And my friends come round, I just like, stop.
I love that though.
Yeah, I just...
Why the fuck would you want to be doing shit? You're meant to be enjoying that person's company.
That's nothing against my friends if they are listening. I'm not saying
no judgment.
Can't help it. That's their thing. But yeah, I can't do it. But I wish I could be a bit like it because I've got a kitchen now that's a complete mess. But
yeah, same. I am one of those people where it's like, I'll do nothing and then it will get to like 10 to 5 in the evening and it's like, yeah. Okay, I'm going to get everything done. And like, I'm like, I'm woken up. Yeah.
The engine revs up. Did you get actually diagnosed then, or was it something your therapist said?
No, so I went to a psychiatrist and I got diagnosed with ADHD probably about 3 years ago. But the thing with me, I have complex PTSD, and complex PTSD and ADHD, if you were to look at them as a brain scan, they have the same type of brain. So right. I have like sort of complex childhood trauma, basically.
Right, okay.
A lot of people don't know what complex PTSD is. So it just basically means, it just basically means you've had a fuckload of trauma happen to you. It's the way that if you have trauma in childhood, obviously your brain develops so excessively in those sort of fundamental years.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I'll say to you in the type of therapy that I've been doing this last year, which is called IFS, which is called Internal Family Systems, is actually my ADHD symptoms have lessened significantly. ADHD, complex PTSD symptoms I'm not medicated for ADHD either.
Okay.
So it's really interesting, actually. And I'm not saying that I negate the fact that ADHD is a natural thing, but I really do strongly think that a lot of symptoms, I can only speak for myself, are definitely complex trauma. And I think that the blanket of pharmaceutical companies and doctor surgery, and I'm not qualified here, mate. I'm a fucking comedian. All right. I didn't go to university. I personally see it that a lot of people that are diagnosed, often I wonder if they were to go to any form of like in-depth therapy, whether they would uncover the fact that maybe it's not ADHD and it's complex trauma. Because I definitely feel that's the case for me.
Okay.
But it doesn't change the symptoms. It doesn't change the way your brain and body works. And I found it really fascinating, like really fascinating. And the type of therapy that I've done, like, you know, there's I don't know if you've seen like the time lapse of somebody in therapy as they heal trauma of their brain.
No.
And it literally shows the neuroplasty of the brain developing neural pathways, and you watch it happening and it all knits together. And basically it is to say that you're never too old to change, and you're never too old for your brain to overcome and learn and develop. And I find that fucking incredible. And I know that the person I was a year ago versus the person I am now, I don't know. It's like, I don't know how to describe myself. I just feel different.
I did want to jump into your show, but before we do that, I feel like it's relevant to what you're saying now. So obviously your show is called Too Much, but I feel like what you're saying there about being a different person, obviously, does connect to your separation situation.
Yeah.
And I was thinking then about, I feel like, I don't know, with the ADHD and drugs, and I don't know where I am, a friend of mine been on it. And what I find is that it's good when he's on it and he can get stuff done. But then when he's not, he's so tired. So that worries me a bit. So anyway, I think everyone finds what's right for them. But do you wonder whether you feeling better or feeling more of a new person is to do with your separation? Because I know with my own, it's like my ADHD has come out, it's more apparent because I've got more to deal with. I've got so many more little people's, I mean, they were always there, obviously, my little people's lives, but yeah. It feels like they're really on me now. So it's come out more, but I'm not embracing it more, but just owning up to it. And God, I'm really waffling because I don't know what I'm trying to say.
I think what you're trying to get at is, like, now that I've separated from my husband, which obviously has not been public, but my marriage
I'm trying to be very careful. And you did do a wonderful statement on Facebook, if anybody wants to.
Know, like, at the end of the day, I will never share the reasons for the separation publicly, to protect my children more than anything. And they're always going to be more important to me than my public image. That's just, it's the long and the short of it.
Yeah.
But I think that what I can say is that I am able to live more authentically for who I am. For the first time in my life, I'm actually really me. And I think that because I've done so much inner child work, there's such a significant link between listening to an inner child and being able to be with the wounded parts of you, like the exiled parts, the parts that you don't really want to be with because they feel painful or they feel difficult, or you want to not acknowledge the fact that they exist, like all of that. I think I've learned, and it's taken a long time, and I think people forget that it does take a long time to heal. I think through learning to be with all of those parts of me and really listening to what I need and what I want has been the biggest shift in my life. And it's also been the biggest lifesaver, I think, because I truly do value the fact that I am doing something for the first time in my life solely for me. And that is actually benefiting everybody around me for the better, because my children have got the mum they deserve. And I feel happy and I feel free. I think that we can all assume that we know what goes on behind closed doors, but we don't. My relationship, it was always very much like, oh my God, you're couple goals. And I always used to say, no, we're not.
Yeah.
We're not. And I really hate that narrative. And I really hate the way that social media continually plays into this idea, this narrative about what perfect is, because you don't know what goes on behind closed doors, and you don't know what is happening, and you have no idea what someone might be going through. Mm. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be nice to everyone, because I also think that narrative is bollocks, because there's some people that I just can't fucking stand.
Yeah.
And I'm just never going to want to spend time with them because I think they're dicks, and that's all right.
And that's fine. Move on, isn't it? Some people are not like you and you just move on. So let's get to positives then. So I was thinking about this because people always say to me, like when I have a bad day, they'll go, look what we have got, not what you haven't. Or what have you gained? I mean, I remember when one of my really good friends said to me, first of all, bless her, she went, right, is there a little old black book we can get out? Is there anybody you want to shag that you never shagged?
I love it. That's so good.
And that was good because it was suddenly like, oh yeah.
Yeah, I can do that now.
It's all those things. It's not just that I have full control of the remote control. And I mean for the TV, by the way.
Or any other remote control you might have.
It's because I've got you on. I just... Because I was saying off air that I can't find the charger to my vibrator,
which is devastating.
It's definitely, I've gone in every drawer, can't find it.
Well, obviously, because we're literally just about to move, so I've been doing loads of tip runs and stuff, and the drawer underneath my bed is just a disgusting, it's just a drawer of filth basically. So I went through it the other day, all the bloody boxes for all the vibrators I've got, and all the vibrators that I've got that I don't like, but I've kept because it's like this weird fucking token of appreciation for it being near my vagina. And I bin bagged it, and I just thought, I'm going to go down the tip and I can fucking guarantee that that's going to be the bag that rips as I walk to like throw it into the... It didn't, luckily.
Is there anything, Laura, that you feel like... I mean, I think I know what you're going to say, but that you can now do and you couldn't do before? I mean, I know there's a lot of things.
I'm going to say that... Yeah, I just feel free. I feel like that everything is possible, you know? And also, obviously, I am just about to go back out on tour. I'm very aware of the fact that I cancelled my tour, like, last fucking minute. And I think the problem is as, like, everything, mate, which you'll really appreciate, people don't know what goes on. They don't. They do not understand. Sometimes things happen and they're almost, they're sent to fucking test you. So I appreciate the fact that there's probably a lot of audiences out there that would have come to my show that have gone, we're not fucking taking a risk on her. And previously that would have fucking killed me. But now I'm like, you know what? Don't worry. I'll just prove to you the fact that I can fucking do it. And actually it is different this time. And if you don't want to believe in me, that's fine. But guess what? I fucking believe in me. So that's all
right. So you've got a calmness then. You've got a calmness inside that's like,
It'll be all right.
I keep quoting this all the time. You can't say the wrong thing to the right person.
No, you can't.
I think that applies in terms of your audience and your crowd. The right people will stick by it and the rest can jog on, mate.
Yeah, and also it's okay because my comedy career is not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. Like, fucking hell, the amount of times that I should have been sent under and I haven't. So I'm not going anywhere. I have no plans to go anywhere. And if it takes people 6 months, 7 months, 2 years or never to think, actually, I will go and see her live on stage, that's fine because there's other people that will. So I'm making peace with the fact that what I did last year was the right thing for me. And I'm exceptionally proud of myself for that.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Move on.
Hello, you're listening to the Funny Mummy Podcast. Can I have a snack now?
We have to give her 2 minutes of fame. It's my sister with Mum Watch. I don't know about you, Laura. Do you watch a lot of telly?
I watch Netflix, really.
Yeah. They're still telly, I guess, and it's streaming.
I mean, it's not back in the day telly, is it?
It's not BBC One, BBC Two. We would often give each other recommendations. I think because a lot of mums are all knackered, but you do want that sort of time out. It's that thing of like, why do I stay up till 1 a.m? When really I should go to bed. The idea is to save people time.
Oh, I love it.
It's not relevant stuff. That's my remit for her. Is I don't want like Britain's Got Talent or whatever, because we all know about that. It's stuff in the deep archives of Prime.
Yes, fucking love it.
Let's listen to Mum Watch.
Oh, hello, Hattie. Got one of my reviews for you. And I'm following a bit of a theme today. There's an actor that I really do admire, but he just happens to be in two great series that I have loved. And his name is Jonah Howell. Now, the first one was, I think it was 2023, BBC series called World on Fire. And we follow Harry. It starts off before the Second World War. Harry's a bit of an activist from a well-off family, and his mother, that character. You hate her, you love her, she's funny, but she's a character. I'm trying to think who played her. Leslie Manville. Oh, I'm not sure, but anyway, look out for Robina. So it mainly follows him, but we go all over. We follow in Paris and Berlin. Helen Hunt, the American actress, plays a journalist. And she's good as well. But yes, well worth a watch. Two series of that. So lots there for you. Good old binge. The other one, which, I've got to give it, The Tattooist of Auschwitz. And honestly, that Jonah Howell is in that as well, and he is fabulous. The Holocaust is a horrendous subject, but the fact that this is a true story, Lully wrote the book after, well, I won't say because I don't want to do a spoiler, but he decided to write the book years after the war was over. He was in his 70s, and he meets with a woman called Heather, and he tells her the story. But the series called The Tattooist of Auschwitz, which is on Sky, I don't know if you can see it anywhere else, is from the perspective of we watch Heather's interviews with him, the meetings about his story, and then it flashes back to what happened. And sometimes we realise he told Heather one thing, but it's implying this happened, really, you know. Really good, two really good things.
There's the tattoos on them. Yeah, I just realised.
Because isn't Gabor Maté, he's obviously the guy that did it. Isn't Gabor Maté, wasn't he? Because he's in his late 80s, I'm sure of it. I'm sure that he, wasn't he German-Jewish? I'm sure he was.
I don't know, but she's obsessed. If any regular listeners Well, no, the other ones often feature something to do with World War II.
She really likes World War II. Fucking hell, it's like listening to you.
I know, we do sound alike. Sometimes.
You sound so similar.
Yeah, I think she's got a thing for that Jonah Howe.
Bless her.
Sometimes it is just people she fancies.
You know what I'd recommend? Did you watch Motherland?
I did, when we had Holly Walsh on here before, who's one of the co-writers.
Oh, but did you?
Yeah, one of my favourite episodes. She's a great gal.
Well, have you watched Amandaland?
I've watched one, yeah. What are you thinking?
I'm enjoying it. It's not as good as Motherland. I think I miss the other characters.
Yeah.
But it is good. I like it. I love Amanda. And it's funny as well, because I felt like motherhood, I don't know if you do, but like I can pick those people out in my playground. It felt so fucking relevant to just like everyday life as a mother trying to manage a career or trying to manage children, and like the way in which you can be in one playground and there'd be such vastly different characters in it.
I mean, I know you made a joke before about like, I'm the mum you don't want to lock eyes with in the playground.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, everyone probably knows who you are now.
Yeah, they do. I think the thing that's probably reversed probably for me in more recent times is I'm now the one that won't like lock eye contact with anyone in the playground. I'm so over the bullshit. I don't have any room for it. I'm bullshitted out. I used to be such a chronic people pleaser. I'd be like, oh, you have to speak to them. And now I'm like, no, I just don't like you, so I'm not going to. And also, I've taken the piss so heavily out of the mums in the playgrounds that I'm pretty sure that they know not to talk to me anymore anyway. And it's very surface level. And I'm okay with that. I can't be doing with the bullshit. I just can't. And there's some mums in the playgrounds that are just cunts. And I think, I don't want to waste my time. Why would I want to do that? Because invariably, what you're going to do is make me feel like shit.
And I think I was a bit like that at the beginning. I was so anxious about must make friends. And then it was when I calmed down that the right people will find you, if you know what I mean. So now I do have my people that I will go and talk to. But some days I put my hood up and I'm like, I can't be doing talking to anyone today.
Yeah.
But generally I've got two really good mum friends that I know, even if I don't want to talk, I'm like, don't talk to me.
Yeah, but you know what? I've got two, maybe three mums in the playground. And they are my some of my closest friends. One of them in particular, she also does my nails, but she's one of my closest friends. I adore her. And I don't know, maybe it's my age where I just think, why the fuck do I want to make friends with someone when I already have great friends? The applications have fucking closed for my best friend. Like, I've already got them.
However, though, would this bother you? I don't know if you have the people that you see probably every day and you just go, hello. And some people you might not actually never get further than going, hello. Or morning, and there's one woman on my street, she lives on this fucking street, and she will not have eye contact, a smile. I have tried everything.
Be my friend.
I'm just like, you literally live opposite me, you have a son, you go to the same school. This is gonna be awkward otherwise. We're gonna see each other every day. And I did just give up, but every now and again I see her and I really just want to get a fanfare and a trumpet out when she goes past. Like, just to annoy her, just be like, just smile.
Yeah. Just acknowledge my fucking existence, man.
Who am I in Amanda Land? I'm not Amanda, I'm probably Anne, really.
Yeah, but yeah, I think I don't know that anybody wants to strive to be Amanda, to be fair. I think that she's a brilliant actress. I think that she plays the role so perfectly. And yeah, I'm literally watching it at the moment. And Apple Cider Vinegar, if you haven't watched that, there's another fucking recommendation for you. That's so good.
Oh, no,
on Netflix. Yeah, Apple Cider Vinegar. And it's about Belle Gibson, who was a woman that pretended to have cancer. And she was Australian and basically conned a whole load of people and money. And oh my God, it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
Oh,
yeah.
I love those.
I mean, I just love a psychopath, really. Right. Ultimately, yes. I love a psychopath.
Yeah.
So fascinating, aren't they?
Well, I think anybody that thinks in a certain way that you don't, that you know, like, fascinating. Like, it's why we're fascinated with, I mean, I love a lot of the women who you kill, you know, all these murder. That's why we love them, because we're like,
child of trauma, mate. Child of trauma. I mean, luckily, my child of trauma didn't send me into that route. I became a comedian. It was either that or sex work, Hattie, you know, one or the other.
And on that note, I think you can combine the two these days, OnlyFans, a bit of comedy.
Yeah, why not?
So just to talk about your tour before we go.
Yeah.
So as you said, it was cancelled before, but this isn't your first rodeo. You've done a live, what was the first one called? I've forgotten.
It was just called Knee Deep in Life. And, you know, a lot of people will not know this. Like, the backstory is that being funny online to being funny on stage are two very different things. And sometimes you're not able to do that transition. So the opportunity was given to me a couple of years ago where it was like, look, if you want to sell out or try and sell out a room in the Comedia in Brighton and write a show, we'll see if you're funny. Basically, do you think you could do stand-up comedy? And I was like, yeah, fuck it, let's do it. So I wrote it, I practiced it, I learned it in 5 weeks, and I went out and did it, and it went really well. And it was like,
Did you go and do 5-10 minutes anywhere, or did you go straight into the whole thing?
Straight into 2 40-minute halves, yeah. So yeah, just sort of deep end, but then that's me all over. Like, I just jump 2 feet in into everything that I do. So I was given that opportunity, and then you'll know every single show that you do, you're constantly walking away and going, oh, that bit could have been a bit better. And it's a labour of love being a comedian, isn't it? Yeah. I don't think people realise how much time and energy goes into making a show. No. And it takes a lot. I did that, and I did a full UK tour with that. And then while I was doing that, I was writing my next show, which was Too Much. And I've rewritten Too Much. There's some parts of it are the same, but actually I've adapted it and it's changed, because a lot has changed since when I wrote it. And I literally can't wait to perform it. I think because it feels probably like the first thing that's ever really been me. Like, I really feel like I am in this show. This is so me, and it's not about anybody else. It's not about protecting anybody's egos. It's literally me on stage. And it's me doing what I do best, which is to be funny. I think it's taken me a long time to really believe in myself and see how hard I've worked and why I've got what I've got, because I deserve what I've got. It's taken me a long time to get here, and I'm really proud of it. My whip's next week, actually. So I've got a couple of whips booked in, and I'm so, for anyone who doesn't know, that's work in progress.
For anyone who doesn't know.
Yeah, like, if you're not such a wanky, I'm doing my whip.
She's not getting herself whipped.
Yeah, no, that's not my thing. I'm so excited to go out and have this freedom to be who I am and to be able to perform and be on stage.
Yeah.
You know, I love being on stage. I love interacting with the audience. I love how every single show is so different and how I can change and adjust and lean in and lean out and really gauge. I feel like it's where I was destined to be. That's honest to God. That's the only way I can describe it. I feel like this is exactly where I was meant to be, was doing comedy.
Did you have a background in performing arts or anything like that at school or whatever? Was that something?
I mean, I fucking loved drama. Was the only B that I got in school. And then I started doing performing arts, and then I dropped out of college. When I was a little girl, I was like, I'm going to become a famous actress one day. That's what I always wanted to do. So performing has always been at the base of everything that I am. And I've always been funny, but I never saw myself as a comedian, because I don't think I thought I was funny enough.
But also, I don't know what your upbringing in terms of what you had around you. If you didn't have peers and stuff, I don't mean Piers Morgan, we don't want him. If you didn't have even grandparents or something, I had no one that was really in the performing world. I didn't know that.
It's just me.
That was a job. Why would you? Unless you have those sort of parents that go, let's get you into drama, you know.
Yeah, no, I didn't have that. And I really wanted to go to drama school. I was so desperate to become an actress. I was so sure that's what I was going to be. But yeah, like you, I just didn't have a background of that. I had a background of very normal working class parents. And, you know, I had two siblings that were a lot older than me as well. And they were in very normal jobs too. So it was so alien. And then when I first started Knee Deep in Life, it was quite difficult, I think, for my family to respect and honour it, because obviously it was so important for me. I think I thought what was important to me was to use my body to send a message. And I think the thing that I've learned in the process of everything that I've gone through in more recent times is that I was screaming something, but it wasn't about my body. It was more about being desperate to be free.
Right.
And that felt like a really, really big rebellion, because it was the opposite of everything that my family would have ever approved of. And the more that they disapproved, the more I pushed harder against it. And now I realise I'm not ashamed of how I started Knee Deep in Life. The reality versus expectations, I'm not ashamed of any of it. I wouldn't change it for a second.
In some way, what you did was harder in the way, in terms of you were working out who you are, not just personally, but who you are as a performer.
Yeah.
Because it's all about finding your voice and your patter. But you were doing it live to the world, where most people just go and do it in a little comedy club and a couple of people. And I was also thinking, if I was a good writer, some beautiful metaphor to do with your first sketch where you get the thing trapped, the
Spanx
thing stuck around your waist. There's some beautiful metaphor there about
there is.
Being stuck and not being free.
And now I am. But now I love comedy so much, I would get into writing comedy. I love writing. I find writing easy and I love comedy. So, the way I look at my life now is it's just beginning. I'm 40, but I feel like I'm only just beginning to live my life now.
It's nothing. You're a baby. Let's write something together, Laura. We're going to start wrapping up and say goodbye to the civilians. No, I shouldn't really.
The civilians.
I've got to say.
The fucking freeloaders.
If you want more out of life and this podcast, then sign up to the Patreon. Funny Mummies on Patreon. But for now, this is a chance for you to big up anything you've got coming up. And anyone else, any other women you would love to enjoy, lift?
Yeah, so very quickly. So my tour, Too Much, that Belfast on the 9th of April. And then the 17th of April, I'm in London. And then there are more dates in May. And I will be doing the Edinburgh Fringe this year as well, which is my first year. So I'm very excited about that. I'm just basically going to be anywhere and everywhere doing exactly what I love. And I would love for you to join me. But women that I would love to big up, Victoria Eames is always going to be top of the list. She is my life wife. I met her through social media and she's the best thing that ever happened to me.
We have had her on the pod, of course.
She's a beautiful human being and I adore her. You should check her out because she's just fucking brilliant. And
of course you do your podcast together.
We do. We have our podcast called No Holds Barred, which is also on Patreon. I apologise if you don't like to spend out, but you would have to pay £3 a month if you wish to join
us. Let's be honest, it's less than a coffee.
And then I would also like to shout out the people that I feel pioneer a lot of like mental health support and recovery. One is called Chantelle Wade. She's Canadian, but she does a hell of a lot of stuff on Instagram about parts work, which is kind of the style of therapy that I do. And so much of what she writes makes so much sense, especially if you're in the journey of recovery. I think that that's profoundly important. The holistic psychologist, Nicole, she is incredible. She is another person that talks so passionately about recovery and how healing is possible. And I think that when you are stuck in abusive situations, it can feel like it's never ending. And I think it's important to know that there are people out there that can pioneer hope. So those are two women off the top of my head. I personally find that social media can be a bit convoluted with regards to comedians because some of them are cunts in real life, Hattie, let's be honest. I'm sure you've come across some. I have too. So I don't necessarily have many relationships really for me to be able to support, love or honour because I don't know that many. But another one that I adore and I think is fucking brilliant. And the first time I saw her was when I went to go and see Celeste Barber and she was the warm-up act. And to be honest with you, I could have quite happily sat and listened and watched her all night long. Her name is Esther Minito, if you haven't heard of her.
Oh, yes. We've had Esther on. Yeah.
I love Esther. Yeah. I absolutely adore her. I think she's fucking brilliant at what she does. And knowing how she went into comedy and how she's crafted her career, in my opinion, I find her so inspiring and I really look up to her. So she's another comedian to just look out for and massively support and send so much love to.
Perfect. Thank you, Laura. For everyone else, we'll say goodbye. Everyone else will stick around. We might have a little dating chat.
Maybe, a little bit. Absolutely.
Maybe. Tiny. Just the window shopping. Thanks very much, for everyone, for listening. Keep listening, keep subscribing, keep sharing. See you over on Patreon soon. Thank you very much to my wonderful guest, Laura Belber.
Thank you very much for having me. Yay!
Thank you. I've been Hattie Ashan. And thank you to my producer, Natalie King. Don't forget to join the gang over on Patreon. Just search for Funny Mummies Podcast with Hattie Ashdown. For the price of a coffee, you could support this podcast. You'll get to hear it first, you'll get a full version and loads of other perks. Come join the Funny Mummies community.
Happy Mother's Day! Happy Mother's Day!